All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789, Texas, that same number. So let me do this before we go back. We've got two tickets to give away to tonight's Boston Red Sox Milwaukee Brewer game at 7:10 p.m. this evening. Be caller number 4. And you will receive two tickets again to the Boston Red Sox and the Milwaukee Brewers what's the name of the park, man?
American Family Field.
All right. Caller number 4. So before we went to break, we were talking about an article, Michelle Obama. It was on Gayle King on yesterday, and she says she's been married to Barack Obama for 30 years, and 20 of them were great. So it spurned a discussion about whether or not, you know, I mean, what is it, you know, that keeps people tied together, and what does it take to make a marriage, the longevity of a marriage? And so we've had nothing but men call, which is surprising to me. But we've got Tom from L.A. Thank you for hanging on, Tom. You say what?
You better. First off, the word love is a verb. And people need to know
action,
that. Love
action.
Is not a feeling.
Right.
Love is a verb. It's what you do. Exactly. And I would say three words that are for successful marriage are using please, thank you, and I'm sorry. Those are three words where you're basically swallowing your ego and putting that other person first. And a lot of times we forget that as marriages go on. The other thing I know when I met my husband, I had said to him, I am already a happy person all by myself. But I would like to see if we could actually add to that happiness. And there's so many people that I see out there that do get divorced that they really end up with the same person again when they get remarried, because the problem lies within them. The problem is not maybe with that other person. And I think the other thing is that, like we were talking about, it's commitment. And you both have got to be on the same page in terms of being committed people. My parents were married for 56 years, so they were a great example of, you know, what marriage is until dad passed. But the thing is, yeah, it's funny. You'll see people that are married for 2-3 years or whatever, and they're, you know, I always use the example of someone that I knew that was married. He gets married, I think, every 15 years. and basically, you know, splashing around in the water with his now wife and all this kind of stuff. And then I saw my parents who had been married for 56 years. My mom was like, get away from me. and I was like, you know what? That's what marriage is. Marriage is actually working together and making it work.
Well, you
and
know,
I think, you know.
You know, Tom,
go ahead, Earl.
My parents were married for 66 years before the evil consequences of time took my mother. And they raised 13 children.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was good and bad. And again, anytime two people from different backgrounds come together, you've been raised differently. You're not the same. So
100%.
You know, you find a way, you make a pathway. Anybody if would have never guessed that Michelle Obama would say that I've been married 30 years and 10 of them were no good. Come on, man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Michelle Obama is exactly the type of person that we need in the presidency.
Yeah, I'm saying the fact that she would say
truth.
That publicly does it, what it does, Tom, is then it makes it possible for others who are married to say, well, hey, it's not just me, right? It's not just our marriage.
Absolutely.
Everybody. Look, the president of the United States and the first lady, for 10 years, they had a rocky situation. And the fact
makes it authentic.
Yeah, and the fact that she said when you add kids to it, it became even more difficult. So yeah, I mean, I think that's great advice, Tom. Really appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go to Charles from Green Bay. Hey, Charles, thank you very much for the call. Are you an old goat, too?
Thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm an old goat.
Okay, well, you're in the club, man. You're in the club.
My wife and I have been married for 48 years.
Yeah, you're an old goat.
And we only have had one fight in those whole 48 years. It's the same one every day, every morning.
Who's going to cook?
It's just the old adage, you know, look at, you're going to fight. You're going to disagree. You're going to have, you know, hard times. You're going to have good times.
Right.
And you know what? If you can't love someone in those times, that's, you know, you're having a tough time. I mean, we've had our differences, we've had our differences and agreements and stuff like that. Exactly.
Hey, man, come on.
So what? Everybody does.
Yes. And well, here.
So live with you.
Well, here the former president of the United States, who people talked about as one of the greatest presidents in the history of the nation, his wife is saying, "Hey, for 10 years, I didn't like him, right?"
Exactly.
No,
exactly.
Man, but they're still together.
You know what? If I would say that the whole total package would be in the 48 years. There's been days when, you know, we haven't spoken to each other, but we still stay together.
You know, Charles, when you look at me, I always say I was once a mighty warrior. I really was. And then I got married. And the mighty warrior has been put to rest. So
the mighty warrior is not put to rest, has been put, you know, in its place.
Yeah.
My mom told my dad they were married for, oh my goodness, I got to do the math quickly, 54 years before my mom passed. And my dad, when he retired, my mom told my dad, because my dad was a salesman, that, look it, this is my house. You live it my way, or we're gonna have it out. And you know, and he understood it because you know he was gone. My mom was my mom and dad for how many years when my dad was on the road. I admire the woman. I admire, you know, my dad for what he did. I mean, it's. It's give and take. It's not take.
Yes.
And I think the last time I said no to my wife was when, you know, I can't remember. It's been so long.
You know, Charles, man, it's really good information. I thank you guys for having the conversation because, again, I can't believe not one woman called. Because we're going to move on. But I am amazed that in a subject like this, not one woman called. I don't know what that says. That includes my wife. She didn't call either. But anyway. honey, I'm only joking. Honey, I'm only joking. Anyway. We are going to have a discussion after the break. And I'm going to be joined by two of my colleagues, John Brown and Don Brown, I'm sorry, and Johnny Watermelon. And we're going to talk about rural communities and what's going on in the rural communities and, you know, many rural communities have turned red. They're voting Republican. Those used to be bastions of Democratic votes and union people. And something happened along the way. Now many of those areas are all red. So, you know, I would like to know, you know, what happened, what transpired, what is going on. I don't live in rural Wisconsin. I've only visited certain parts of it since I've been with the radio station. So I think we need to have the dialogue and the conversation. We'll do it after the break. 844-967-2789 is the number. Since we are heard, you know, in those rural enclaves, we'll be right back.
Time for music.
Did you hear Joe Cocker earlier?
I did, yeah.
All right.
I heard The Hustle, too.
Yeah, the hustle was good, man.
We used to dance at gym class.
That's some old stuff, man, right? Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number, and delighted to have my co-workers in the studio once again, Mr. Dunn Brown.
Hello, Earl.
And Johnny Watermelon.
How you doing, Earl? Hey, Don.
Listen, man, we want to have a discussion about rural America.
Yep.
And what is taking place in rural America today. Because when I was a young man, rural America was blue. They voted blue.
Yeah.
They were Democrats. They were unionized. And you knew for sure that's what the Democratic Party would make hay. Because again, the farms certainly, you know, were supported in many instances. And now it's completely changed to red for the most part. So, Don, what are the main issues in rural Wisconsin and also rural America?
You know, I in a previous job I got to travel all around rural Wisconsin as well as rural Illinois and Iowa, and you know, and there it's all about small business. There's some farming left, but it's not what it used to be. And when the economy's good, they're doing well. But when it's not, you know, like I said, it's mostly small business driven. They really take it on the chin. And I think there's this angst or there's this perception that the city people get so much more resources from the federal government.
Yeah, that is
when a lot major of those funds are, they're distributed proportionately. And so, but their perception's reality. Like I was listening to a show on NPR a few years ago, and these people come in from rural communities where there's dirt roads, some of these unincorporated communities, and they come to Wisconsin for State Fair or a Brewers game, and they see the clovers and the roundabouts and all these improvements and, you know, new highways, and they're like, well, what about us? And so I think there's a lot of that resentment and fear, hatred, all those things that are so easy to, you know, to prey on, and that's what happened with the Trump revolution is you had people from rural communities that traditionally don't vote, that just that felt that they had a platform or someone that was like looking out for them. And of course, it was all smoke and mirrors, you know. But yeah, so it's at one time it was the heartstring of this country was our agriculture economy. You know, we were mostly an agrarian society, and we've gone so far away from that. And my hope is, and my thought is that, especially one thing we learned from the pandemic is that we had to go off our shores to find the things that we needed, the most basic things that we needed, like toilet paper and good food. And so I'm hoping that there's a rebirth. And I know the Biden administration had put some big funds towards this that's going to go back into our rural communities, rebuild our agricultural sectors, rebuild these local small businesses.
Do you actually believe that they're going to rebuild the agricultural centers since corporations now control all of that? Do you and also the fact
it's not going to happen overnight, but I think we can start chipping away. And it's really we as consumers start voting with our wallets, and we start looking at. I mean, you know, we subsidize added sugar so much. It's a double dip when we go to the store. We're paying the sugar industry twice, and we shouldn't even have as much added sugar in our diets to begin with. But also, I'm even thinking, you know, in the seminar last night, I said, you know, rural is a new urban with some of the problems we're having with drugs and violent crime and problems with the schools. But I see maybe the next urban revolution could be in agriculture, knowing all the really cool things you can do with modern technologies in these abandoned buildings and these abandoned lots. And especially where there's these food deserts, as they call them, where you've got urban communities growing their own produce and supporting healthier children instead of getting on two buses to go to the nearest store or go to the nearest gas station and get high cholesterol, fatty foods or the McDonald's.
So here's what we'll do, Johnny. We'll come to you after the break because I want to start with you right away, and then we got to go to a break quickly.
Okay.
But I do think it's a conversation that has to be had, and the conversation we had, I was a part of last evening with civic media from across mm-hmm. the state to hear from my colleagues from across the state and others. That was eye-opening, and I think that the only way we can work through any of these things is through dialogue, and so we want to at least touch base with it now and then do it some more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then that's how you begin to overcome some of these things. But anyway, got to go to a break. All right. My guests are Mr. Don Brown and Johnny Watermelon of WAUK 540 AM. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Texas is the same number. You know, we're actually talking about rural America, where it is today, what the issues are, and so I think it's something that I'm going to be doing more on the show and asking those questions and doing what we can to incorporate listeners from rural America. You know, and let me do this before we go to Johnny. Call the next caller will receive two tickets to the Brewer game tonight with the Boston Red Sox. That's going to be a great game.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't mind going to see that. All you got to do is next caller will get those tickets. So Janet, you grew up in rural America.
Well, I grew up in Green Bay. And I guess it was maybe a little bit rural, but where my real experience, Earl, came with the rural area is I owned some property outside of Spring Valley, and it was a very rural setting. You know, there was 15 acres there, and each parcel had to be 15 acres, so it was a very rural setting. There was not very many houses around there, but I chose to set camp there. So that's what I did. And I'll tell you, that experience brought me a couple of insights to some things, okay, that are a reality. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the things that my experience was there. So one thing that came to top of mind is that when you're in a rural setting, you're a little bit more on your own. Okay, you have to kind of be a little more self-sufficient. So you can't just run down to the local grocery store because it takes more than 5 minutes to get there. It's a kind of a half a county trip. So that was one of the things that I think resonated with me when you asked me to come in and visit a little bit on this. So that was one thing that came to top of mind. The other thing that Don mentioned earlier that I thought was interesting is this: perceived or actual confrontation or reality in people's minds between urban and rural justification for funds that are allocated. I think there's that perception is out there. And I just think that a lot of folks think that the larger masses, the bigger communities, have an unproportionate slice of the pie. I don't know, you know, if that's, you know, accurate in terms of actual data, but you know, if you want to chime back in on that, Earl, and let me know what you think, Don, is that something that you guys deal with in more of an urban setting?
You know, I would say this, wherever the masses of the people are, that's where the resources are going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's always been that way. And so if that perception in the rural community is there, it's because it is true that more dollars are going to come into a city like Milwaukee with 600,000 people than they would in some rural area where they've got 15,000. But that's not new. That's always been the case.
Sure.
And so I would ask, Don, a lot of this has to do with the fact that the things that made rural America what it was the fact that people could make it on their own. They had their own little piece of Americana.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they followed in the footsteps of their ancestors, mm-hmm, who had those farms.
Yeah.
And so who could make a living and a go of it.
Yeah.
Something happened in between that's no longer the case.
And it was debilitating for a lot of those farming families. You know, that just the corporatization, for lack of a better term, of the farming, the agriculture industry.
Yeah.
They couldn't
industrializing it.
They couldn't compete with that on any level. You know, one of the most powerful lobbyist groups, the NRA of the 19th century, was the Grangers, the patrons of husbandry. And it was, and some of them still exist, but it was these chapters of farmers at a local level that grew nationally and had a lot of influence on our politics. You know, obviously now that simply doesn't exist. And so I think for a lot of these, you know, like I know I was in Al McKee County, Iowa, in the north, northeast corner, beautiful part of the world, part of the Driftless region. And there were some of these farms that the heirs were moved on to Chicago, and they're watching through virtual their farms, and they sublet little lots out to, you know, share takers, if you will, smaller. And they're either trying to make a go at it organically or even just growing for their own subsistence. But it's you're right. It's going to be hard to compete with. And my only, what I think there's an opportunity for rebound is what's been used for the economy. Like I know during the Obama administration, there was a lot of development of corn for environmental use to make sustainable plastics, I think it was.
So
but also we as consumers being aware of the kind of food we're getting at the supermarkets.
So the world changed.
With our wallets.
So the world changed. And when corporations were able to and looked at what was going on and realized that they could make money and make a living with and technology advancing.
Right.
The local guy that could not compete with technology, with the farm, with what they do in farming now, the cost of the new equipment that is used and needed, the sheer amount of land that the corporate farms have, if it's livestock or whether it's growing vegetables or whatever it is, they dwarf and swamp the little guy.
Right.
They force that little guy to sell out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, in many cases that's true. So
yeah. So that's one of the reasons why they're angry. Mm-hmm. And what I say to that is, from the an urban perspective, is, you know, the place that I used to work that housed 6,700 people has been gone and nothing replaced it. And so people struggle and suffer. We have the same kinds of issues because the cities, many people in the cities are suffering and struggling. It's the same thing. We have a government that has chosen the corporations, over the people, be it in the rural area or be it in the urban area. Mm-hmm. The major corporations that used to be in the cities have headed all overseas. Politically, decisions were made that impacted the cities as well as what happened in rural America. And I don't know if rural America understands that, you know, right now, the Republicans who said that they're going to do some things to change rural America have not been able to do much to change it.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, and it's all lip service, and maybe even from both sides. But it's like the American farmer, or the idea of growing our crops locally and sustainably, it doesn't have to be organic, is a foreign concept. It's like a back of another era.
Well, yeah, the American farmer, I hate to say it, but they're a dying breed.
Unfortunately, yeah, they are.
I mean, we and I know people talk about it with fondness.
Yeah.
But you know, the younger people who grew up in those rural areas,
yeah.
They don't want to farm.
Right. You know, I got to chime in here on something, and there's one glimmer of hope here. Okay, let's not it's not all doom and gloom. You know, as some of the listeners may know, I'm actively involved in the farmers market in Waukesha. And I got to tell you, if you want to have a good experience, just have some fun, walk around. There's all kinds of things to do there. But the food element is really heightened. You get to experience, look, touch, feel on a very, I don't want to say organic level. Of course, there's organic farmers there. But it's a more down-to-earth, small farmer, boutique, if you will, kind of experience where you really interact with these people. You get some knowledge. You get some great food. And I think farmers markets across the state of Wisconsin and the country, Madison's got a huge one. Waukesha's got a great one. They're all over the place. Appleton, you know, they close off College Avenue. All of that stuff is a reintroduction of that local, I'm going to call it boutique farmer, smaller scale deal, where they're actually sustaining and bringing good product and food to the marketplace.
Well, I think that's a bright spot. The question is, can they make a living?
You know, they do. I mean, they're not going to get rich, but they make a sustainable living. And the important thing is more we can do to market farmers markets and market, you know, give consumers better choices than what's there at the supermarket, then I think that could, you know, again, we have the ultimate power if we can reach in our pockets. The more farmers markets we have accessible, the more we introduce some urban farms, which I think it's there. The footprint's there.
So let's do this.
Better we can feed local communities.
Hey, Al, you say what?
I didn't hear. I've been bouncing in and out, running between meetings. But One thing I didn't hear was about back in the 30s and 40s when there was the big transition from the South to the North for jobs in the industrial areas, how people, especially minorities who were forced to farm, refused to do that after they left, and they stayed as far away from anything having to put in their hands into dirt as possible. And over the years, as the elders got older and they still had land, family land in the South, they went back to it. But the kids refused because they felt like when we were slaves, we were forced to do that, and that's not the kind of work or careers that we want to be involved in. But with all of the issues with the food, you see more and more backyard farms or gardening than you've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, it's about certain brainwashing have taken people away from growing and getting involved in food production, especially minority populations from this country. Now, you bring people in from other countries, they love the fact that they have the opportunity, but today you can't afford to purchase a farm because the land is too expensive.
Hey, Al, thank you very much for the call. We're running out of time. Really appreciate it. You know, guys, at the root of it is how do we forge a workable partnership with rural America and urban America, because again, the issues are the same. You talk about schools and what's happened with the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in the city. People are complaining about the food deserts.
Yeah,
they exist
in food swamps.
Yeah, they exist in the city. The fact that people struggle, the cost of rent. Same issue. All these are the same issues, and yet somewhere along the line, we've somehow gotten to a point where we're kind of enemies of one another.
Mm-hmm.
When the wealthy, who created it all, have been taking advantage of the situation.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, really, that's what it is. The paper mills that were the backbone, not just the farms, but the paper mills of rural America, rural Wisconsin, the paper mill was the backbone of the towns and the cities.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, Wisconsin Rapids, yeah, I mean, well, they took a huge hit.
Well, who took the paper mills away? And why? Right? I mean, these are the questions that need to be asked. And they left this gaping hole in what was once a burgeoning town, right?
Yeah.
You know? And so these are the things done that I think, and the conversations that have to be had. You know, number one, we have to start having the conversations, and that's what we're doing right now. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Don Brown, my colleague, and Johnny Watermelon, another colleague. You can join us at 844-967-2789. We'll be back.
That's right.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And, man, this went too fast. We got to get back on this. I'm going to bring you guys in for a longer stretch next week. We'll check your calendars and so we can get into the meat and potatoes in this discussion.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, when the corporations left the cities, the corporations didn't have the power themselves to just say, we're going to take these jobs overseas. Elected officials changed the laws and made it possible for the corporations to do what they did. The paper mills leaving the northern towns, they couldn't just up and move. Politicians changed laws to make it possible for these corporations to leave the shores of this country. And so people need to be educated on how and why this happened. And I'm not saying that them knowing is going to change, you know, their thoughts on things, but at least if they knew who the culprits were,
yeah, right,
they would stop voting for the culprits who helped create it.
Well, you know, I guess the winning ribbon goes to the guy with the most money that influences the legislature, right?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, is it sort of like a sarcastic way of saying the guy with the most money wins?
Well, and it's the federal, and the NAFTA and global economics was something that was created on a national scale.
Yeah. Yeah. We're living in an oligarchy.
Yes. So Don, that's what's there. So we know that. So how do we get around it?
We were faced with a huge economic disparity back in the Depression, and we invested in a stronger federal government that put together all these programs that put people back to work. You know, I hate when people say, well, the New Deal didn't get us out of the Depression. Maybe it didn't, but what it did is it put people back to work. It created confidence. It built parks and forests. And that whole program created a whole generation of teachers, small business owners, park rangers. We need some leadership at the top levels that's much more representative than the current oligarchy we have now.
Well, here's the difference. There's not a lack of jobs. There's a lack of family sustainable jobs.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So, you know, we're right now we're in a service economy. We went from a manufacturing economy to a service economy.
Right on.
Absolutely.
How do you change that dynamic?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, again, one thing that we learned from COVID was that when our backs were against the wall and we needed basic supplies like toilet paper, we had to go overseas to get them, and that created problems. And we're still having problems. You know, even when we're out of the COVID in terms of exposures, we're still dealing with supply chain issues because of it. And so at a lot of people at leadership levels are realizing that, you know what? We got to start making clothes here again. We've got to start looking at ways to make toilet paper. We got to grow our own food.
Well, it was
and keep it here.
It was people on the leadership level who took the jobs away.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when we say we got to rely on them to bring it back, the only way they'll bring it back is if the people organized, bring the pressure necessary to bear on both Democrats and Republicans,
right. Yeah.
But they've succeeded in dividing the people.
Yeah, anybody that understands economics knows that you need a population that's paid well enough to buy your products so that you can continue to be profitable.
Are you saying then
what I'm saying is that the wealthy, those people calling the shots, they want it both ways. They want their cake and eat it too. They don't want to pay the labor costs, and they want to make the profit. So they move all those things overseas, and that's what's hurt this country terribly.
Yeah.
And so that's why your friend called the other day saying, well, boy, if we keep cutting taxes for the rich, there'll be more jobs, there'll be more money.
What makes anybody think?
Not true at all.
That those people, the wealthy, are going to all of a sudden get religion. They're going to have to be forced into giving up and they've made the amount of money they've made over the last 40 years, they should be in shape enough that they should be able to say, okay, I got enough.
Yeah.
But they're greedy. And so they haven't had enough. Let's go to Ken quickly from Sturgeon Bay. Hey, Ken, thank you. Quickly.
Hey, gentlemen. Yeah, my take on it is the energy. When you increase energy costs 60 to 70% in 2 years, it's a trickling effect.
That's a good point, Ken.
This was not created under Joe Biden. We're talking 30 years.
Well,
we're talking 30, 40 years.
think you're speaking.
Diesel fuel price. Go for it.
Yeah, sorry.
When left office, were $2.40. Look at it now.
No, you're missing the point, man.
Everybody, us rural farmers agree we need change, but you can't just cut it off. I mean, it's not even Memorial Day yet, and gas prices are $4.
Yeah, you know why?
Do
you know why the prices are $4?
Yeah, because the administration in the White House.
No.
He said.
Wrong.
Earl.
Yeah, wrong country.
Not wrong. It's because the people who have the oil reserves said we're going to cut back on our production to make sure that the prices went up. That's why. It didn't matter whether it was a Democrat or a Republican.
And the futures market dictates gas prices, not the White House.
We were energy dependent not less than 2 years ago. Now we have to buy almost 35% to 40% or
listen. You say we were energy dependent, but the truth of the matter was we were never energy dependent because we were still buying hundreds of millions of gallons of oil from Saudi Arabia and everywhere else.
That's because that was contracted out. Once the contracts would have went out, we would have been oil.
I got to go, man. Thank you very much for the call. I wish I had more time. So Don and John, we're going to spend more time on it a day next week. We'll spend a couple hours in the conversation.
Okay.
Because we want the listeners from the audience to chime in because we've got to work on this. We've got to figure out what the answer is. The answer can't be blaming one another, rural and urban.
Right.
It's going to take a mixture of both of us to get things worked out. All right, guys, thanks.
All right,
Earl.
Wish I had
thanks,
more
Earl.
Time. All right.
Always a hoot.
Thank you, Connor. Who won the tickets?
That's actually Calvin.
Oh, Calvin.
Al from Milwaukee won the tickets.
Al from Milwaukee. That's our Al, right?
All right, yeah.
He's gonna
Al rules.
All right, listen, we got to go. Thank you, everybody, who made
thanks,
the show.
Thanks, Earl.
Brewers.
All right, Calvin.
Yep. This is Milwaukee Shot tomorrow morning at 8.
All right, we'll talk later. Bye. Man,